We haven't started the episode yet.
What?
Okay.
We just started recording.
It just... Okay, so we did start the episode.
Okay, guys, welcome back. This is MGM Market Abilities. I can't believe we've never had Sam on the episode. So everybody, welcome Sam Salinas. Is that how you say your last
name?
That
is how you say it.
Okay.
People have been saying my last name wrong for my whole life.
I really want to like say it with an accent, but I feel like I'm going to choose the wrong accent.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, one, and then someone's going to get triggered on YouTube.
Wouldn't be a great
And then
look.
We're going to get taken down.
Someone called me like some very, like my last name's very Hispanic, but someone said it at Men's Warehouse the other day with like a very Russian. It was really weird.
You know what's weird?
Salazo, something like that. It was like...
I actually kind of wanted to do it in a Russian accent, like just now.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I never would have... If I had looked at my last name, I never would have thought it would be Russian.
Yeah, so I think lesson one of today is you can pronounce your last name very differently, and it can get you either further in life or shorter in life.
There we go. I've
never heard somebody say shorter in life.
Me neither.
Doesn't sound right. I feel like it should be a different word.
I don't even... Yeah.
Put down in the comments what people who don't go far in life, they go, it's not shorter. It doesn't feel right, does it?
Yeah, and we'll see your comment, and then we'll correct ourselves live on the show. So
it's not live.
I know.
All right, so anyways, today, so if you guys don't know, which I know you guys don't know, but Sam's actually been editing a bunch of the shorts that go out on social media, and he is a big part of Growing Media right now. He's been editing. How long have you been with Growing Media?
I've been here since August last year.
So it's been over a year.
Over a year,
dude,
yeah.
It doesn't feel like it. Like, I literally thought you came in like February or something.
I know. That, I agree. Like, time really flew coming here. But it also is weird because I started working in studio from August to December, and then I started working from home January through now. So it's kind of like divided up.
Really? You've been working remotely since January?
Pretty much.
Oh my gosh. Where have I been? Here.
Here.
Yeah. Okay, anyways. So today we are talking about how to freelance yourself as... Sorry, how to market yourself as a freelancer. Totally got that messed up. I'm thinking about the shorter life thing still, and it's still bothering me. So anyways.
That'll be the next episode.
No, it won't. It will definitely not be the next episode. But so, you know, everybody at Growing Media is a freelancer of some sort, whether you're doing video, audio, photography, or all three, or whatever. Doesn't really matter. Which is a blessing and also can be a bit of a curse, right? Because it's like with freelancing is you eat what you kill, right? And as terrible and gruesome as that sounds, it's very, very true. Like, you can only make money if you get that work that month. So how do you actually market yourself to where you are getting consistent work?
It's a really good question, because I think when it comes to Growing Media, Growing Media freelancing is very different from like freelancing in general. Yeah. Like, my first introduction to freelancing was through Growing Media. Now I'm only recently starting to actually freelance, and boy, am I learning some lessons. So like, I definitely haven't gone to the marketing bit, because my experience for Growing Media and for this, like this job I'm doing right now was, hey, I could do this. I could edit this for you. So
right,
it's very like, I, you know, Dead air. Say something.
Yeah. So that is like, in my opinion, one of the best avenues as a freelancer to actually get started is to, if you can work with alongside of a company that already exists, that's doing a great job, and really they just need freelancers to edit and to shoot content. And you know, for their business to grow and for you to get either some reps in or just to get work, right? Like, there's nothing wrong with that. But when it comes to if you don't have that, or if you don't want to do that, which I don't know why you wouldn't, because working with Growing Media is great and it's consistent. And
I could attest to that.
Yeah. See, boom. A year long attestment.
Mm-hmm. You're kind of like,
I'm phrasing things weird. Go ahead.
That's all right. You could freelance. You could phrase things however you want to.
I'm a freelancer.
There we go.
Nobody's telling me what to
do. You're your own boss, really. But yeah, freelancing is kind of like, I feel like, just in my experience, having like normal jobs for my whole life up until last year, you're kind of getting thrown into the deep end whenever you freelance, because now you're the boss. You're your boss. You're part of marketing. Like you're doing literally everything.
Yeah.
Unless you do, what was it called in the last episode? White label. Unless you white label. But
yeah,
I don't know, maybe that's out of my depth. But it's definitely like a learning curve that you have to get used to freelancing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's if you've been working your whole life at like a normal job, like for example, I worked at three different pizza places, you know, in college.
Pizza man.
Yeah. And refereed soccer and, you know, did all sorts of little odd jobs, you know, but you know, I was working for somebody, you know, a W-4 employee. It's weird whenever you get out there and you're like, oh, someone's not handing me work to do. I have to go find the work. It's very different, but it's also like, there's just two ways to look at it. There's two ways to look at it is like, oh gosh, what am I going to do? How am I going to find work? Or is it like, okay, I'm in charge of my own life now and I love this, you know, there's two different aspects you can look at it, and you know, you can have both at the same time. I think I often have that where I'm like, oh gosh, where am I going to find work? And then also I'm like, thank God I have no one like telling me exactly what to do of every hour, when telling me when to pee, you know, when I can take a lunch break and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's really just about bringing awareness to who you are and what you do. So in my opinion, networking as a freelancer is probably one of the best things that you can do. Just talk to people about it. Tell them what you do. Don't try to sell everybody your services constantly. Just make people aware of what you do. There's been so many times that I've gotten phone calls from people who I was telling some lady at the coffee shop about, oh yeah, I'm an audio engineer. I produce music and all this stuff. And then a month will go by and I'll get a phone call from somebody like, hey, this lady told me that you produce music and they gave me your number and I want to hire you to do this or to run sound for something. And it's just because of that one conversation I had in a coffee shop with somebody. And it really wasn't me trying to sell. So it wasn't even like a business meeting. I was just hanging out there and, you know, I was casually talking to people around me.
Right.
So I think networking is probably one of the best things that you can do as a freelancer. I feel like it's probably harder to do right now. How old are you, Sam?
I'm 24.
Okay. So you're like 8 years younger than me. That's crazy.
I had to think about how old I was. I'm not going to lie.
Wow. So I feel like though, there's a pretty generational difference. I feel like a lot of people closer to your generation do not love to just like randomly talk to each other as much as people that are closer to mine or older. So I feel like that's a big challenge. Am I right about that?
I think it depends on what you do. Okay. Like I work with, sometimes I work in St. Louis as like a grip. If you need a grip, but I really don't like it. But
what is a grip, just for people who don't know, like me?
Grips on film sets are like, they like set up lights. They like lug big things. They do a lot of grunt work, basically. Oh, like okay. They build things, they tear things down. They set up lights. They set up like, you know, diffusion, like all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But, it definitely depends. I think, I don't know if it's a generational, it might be overall, but I think it depends on where you are and who you're with. Like me working with a bunch of film people in St. Louis, everyone my age, I think, is in that mindset where it's like, all right, I have to grind. I have to like go and talk to these people. I have to sell myself because I think, you know, they're living on their, I think they understand.
Yeah.
They live usually on their own and they're like, all right, film is money. Like,
yeah.
Film is my life and I have to make money on it. So I'm going to do everything I can. So it depends. And the same goes for like whenever you network, I think like going to like meet up. Here's how I started editing a little bit outside of GM. Mm-hmm. I would be on sets and I don't like ripping. So I would just be like, yeah, I like editing. Editing is fun. So then I started getting people. I was like, so you edit? Because it turns out not a lot of people like editing. So
yeah, see, that's how I am. So, I mean, I'm first and foremost an audio engineer, 100%. But I found that I like shooting and going out there and getting the content way more than I like editing the content. Now, I don't mind editing. I don't hate it, but I just prefer to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like you're different. I feel like you would prefer to edit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that's a huge change. Like, ever since I started working at GM, I'm like, I've realized I'm more of an editor than I am, like, being on set and stuff. Right. So, like, also just life took me in a different direction where I really want to be anywhere near sets now.
Really?
Just like, I mean, honestly, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it depends, but mostly I like editing is how I make my bread and butter, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And that's something I never thought I would say.
Yeah. And so that's a perfect example of what I was talking about is like, you didn't even like say, oh, I edit for $150 an hour, you know, talking to these people who are shooting the video. You're just like saying, oh no, I just really enjoy editing. Like I just, you know, that's something I enjoy. And then all of a sudden people started reaching out to you.
Right.
Yeah.
Doing it in a very casual way. I feel like it's the best way to market because then you don't seem pushy or you don't seem like I want money right now. Please.
Well, yeah, because people can sense that on you. Like if you're like super desperate for money, like you're strapped for cash and you're trying to take any job that you can get, a lot of people can sense that and they don't want to work with you because they can tell that you're just trying to get work for work's sake and you're not actually going to care about the work, which is then pointless, right? Because it's like if they care so much about putting money into it, they don't want to pay someone who isn't going to care. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, never come off as desperate. Even if you are desperate, like still try as best you can to just be very casual and just know that if you're doing the right things, the universe or God or whatever you believe in is going to work in your favor to get you that of what you need.
Right. And sometimes your work honestly does the mark, like speaks for itself. You know, like if someone sees like if you're an editor and they see this video that you did, but you also color graded and sound designed it and they like it. And also you're a cool person who's not pushy about it. Then, you know, like that'll speak for itself sometimes too.
Oh yeah.
I feel like there are two steps where one's like, yeah, I edit mentioned casually. And then they're like, Sam edits. Let me look him up on Facebook and you like find all the work. Yeah. And it's like, hey, edit my thing for me, please.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was actually my next thing is like, sure, you can talk to people and get people aware, but if they don't have a place to find something that you've done, it's almost pointless. Like a lot of people, I almost feel like there's a lot of people out there that will, if they can't find you and especially work that you've done or any good references or something, they'll just skip over you because they don't want to waste their time of like searching for you and like trying to figure out if you're good enough. You know what I mean? So if you don't have your work posted online somewhere where people can easily access it and be like, oh yeah, this guy's awesome. This is what I want. Then you talking about it all day is not really going to do much for you. Sure. You'll get a few jobs here and there and you'll get some word of mouth, people talking about you, but realistically, if you need a place for people to find you and find what you can do.
Yeah. You want to put that on full display and really never, like, I understood that as like a concept, but never really clicked on me until I started getting tattoos.
Really?
Because then I started looking up like artists.
Oh yeah.
And wanted to see what else, other work they could do and what if like their style fits with what I want.
Right.
You know, and that like kind of clicked it all into place because it's like permanent, but.
But you are an artist though, in the sense of editing. Like editing is still an art form.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's the same general concept of like, people want to see your art of how you put all these clips together and how you decided to put the sound here or there in the video to create some sort of impact. It's the same thing as an artist or a tattoo artist of like what kind of colors they use and how other lines, you know?
Yeah. What's their style?
Yeah. Oh,
that's what I mean. Like, I could talk about kind of like, in place. I'm a tattoo artist, you know, Lucas, I'm a tattoo artist.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, I'm not going to get, okay, cool. But then like,
but if I go to your Instagram and I don't see any like photos or representation of your work, then I'm going to be like, yeah, I'm sure you're a tattoo artist out of your backyard.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, no. So you just like, even if it's just on like your Facebook or your Instagram, just like putting your work out there and marketing, like just putting yourself out there is so important when it comes to like getting people to hire you, especially outside of like your little circle. Cause it's probably like, you could probably get away with, hey, I'm an editor and it's everyone I know.
Sure.
And they're like, yeah, okay, Sam's an editor and you know, I know him. But like, if you want people outside of your little network, you know, and they probably have, honestly, they probably have more capital to spend, then like you need to display your work and you need to like actually let that work speak for itself in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of like friends and family, one avenue that I've used a few times that hasn't been every time, but I would offer them 5-10% of the sale. If someone like recommended someone to me.
Oh.
So like if someone, you know, if I had ended up mixing a few songs for some person, let's just say it was $1,000. And they said, hey, and I told this person previously, hey, I'll pay you, you know, I happily give them $50 or $100 because that person that I mix for may become a reoccurring client next year, you know, when they want to release new music. And so me giving that person $50 or $100, which makes someone's day, like if you just randomly get a $50 or $100 one day, just cause you had a conversation with somebody to recommend somebody. I mean, wouldn't you be happy?
Oh yeah. Right. I'd be so happy.
Yeah. So it's like, I always like want to open that up to some of my friends who I trust to send me okay people. Like I don't want them to send me people who I don't want to work with. But yeah, that's also something that freelancers can do is like, if you can, you know, if you need to upcharge, just upcharge another $100, so you can pay your friend and also pay yourself.
Mm-hmm. Also, like, I don't know how much this relates, but if you're just starting off freelance, maybe don't start off at I feel like in a little more of a humble way, you know, like,
yeah,
like start, you know, like be cheap. Be sure. The cheap option at first, you know, right. That way you could get the work and then you could get like, you know, you're cheap. And also you could set the example, like I am also reliable and I get things done on time and I'm responsive, you know, do that first. And then once you start getting that reputation and more people start coming to you, then up it up, you know, go from 35, go from 35 an hour to like 100 an hour, you know?
Yeah. I mean, well, one of the best rule of thumbs that you can do is if you are a freelancer and you're not getting any work, but you're trying to charge like $100 an hour or something, first of all, lower that until you get people in and do a killer job with everything that you can do. Like do your best that you possibly can do. And then show them that like they're paying you whatever, $30 an hour or something, right? Which sucks, but like is also great because you're getting paid to do what you love. But do it as if you're getting paid $150 an hour. And then they will be like, holy crap, this is incredible. And as soon as you get like booked up for a few weeks and you've got weeks and weeks of work, raise your prices. Because now people are trusting you. And you should be like, well, sorry, this is the new price. Like if you want to get on my calendar, this is the price. And people will start paying it. Yeah. Some people won't, but that's okay.
That's the nature of freelancing.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like how it is.
You win some, you lose some. You know? But like, yeah, no. And if you put $150 worth of like effort into your work, it will translate and people will just look at your work and be like, oh yeah, I'll pay this person a grand.
Well, cause it seems like whenever you do that, it almost seems like, you know, up front, like, oh, someone paid so much money for that, you know, as long as they didn't communicate that right in private, which that's something that that's a big rule for you too. Do not, whenever you have your clients, tell them to never, ever, ever tell people what you charge them because you don't want people to know that you charge them so little for something so great. Because if someone, there's been plenty of times when someone will come to me and be like, hey, I want to do this. I want to do that. How much do you think it'll be worth? And I'm like, well, what's the current budget? And the budget was always over what I was going to charge them. So like never, ever like share, make sure that those prices are not being shared because you don't want to be known as the cheap guy.
Yeah. Ever. I feel like that also just like, I feel like that could also lead to a situation where you like quote someone and then they're like, well, you did this for someone for less than that. Why are you upcharging? It's like, I feel like you don't want to be in that position at all.
No.
You know?
No, because it's very uncomfortable. But also telling people that you value what you do and yourself is also kind of fun to tell people.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like, I'm worth this much. Yeah. And I'm, say, with your chest pumped out. Like,
yeah.
And if you don't, then, you know. But like, it's already like a negotiating thing, you know? It is. Where it's like, you are trying, the game is you're trying to get this person as a client. But then when they are like, lower your price, it's like another, I don't know.
Yeah. See, I actually had to turn down a job the other day. Cause I quoted, I actually gave them a pretty good quote too. I actually lowered it a little bit cause I really wanted to work with them. So I lowered it a little bit and then he was like, oh, I was thinking this and it was almost half of what I quoted them, which was way less. And I was like, nah, man, I can't do that. And then he messaged me again 2 weeks later with a slightly higher one. I'm like, no, I told him, I was like, I really, really do want to work with you and work on your music, but I'm sorry, but I value what I do and my work way too much to go
your time as well.
That low. Yeah.
Like it is a lot of time. Like, it is, time is money. Time is money. And like,
well, and it's like, I ultimately do want to do the work, you know? but I also ultimately want to feed my family,
right?
You know, pay my bills.
The stakes are higher for you, right? Like,
sure, yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, you don't want to spend, I don't know, like, how long does it usually take you to like, what do you do?
Wow. Everybody, Sam Salinas. Okay. So I will, there's lots of things that I do. So I record music. It could be in the studio, it can be live. And then I also do the editing, vocal tuning, mixing and mastering. That's kind of the gist of it. I will do some production as well, where I'm like grabbing the guitar and adding an extra guitar onto someone's song, or keys or bass or some other instrument. But most of the time it's just mixing and mastering. So, and editing. So editing can take a long time just by itself. Like if I need to tune all the vocals, if I need to edit the drums, get them time aligned, I mean, that can take 2 to 3, 4 hours per song. Plus mixing could take anywhere from 3 to 6 hours per song, sometimes less depending on how many tracks there are. It's pretty variable, because it's like, is it a song of 60 tracks with a bunch of drums and guitars and synths and stuff? Or is it like a simple acoustic song with a couple of vocals and acoustic guitar and piano?
Right.
Because, you know, those, you know, I both equally put in quality work, but it's like, with 4 tracks compared to 60, you know, it takes a lot less time. It's
very variable.
Yeah. But I would say like on an average song, it could be about 10 to 12 hours.
Right.
Just for the audio aspect of it. If I have to do any production, you add some hours to that.
Right. Well, I'm just thinking like the way I kind of like think about it in my head is I do pretty consistent work for GM.
Yeah.
And if I do freelance work that is a lot, then I'm going to have to do less GM work, which is consistent work.
Right.
And if that isn't worth it, then I just lost a bunch of consistent work for GM, you know.
So,
it's just,
yeah,
like,
it's true.
So like, just, you kind of have to make the calculation in your head on like what kind of like what the time and money goes, and like if that's worth it or if you're losing money.
And I think you need to know, as a freelancer, you're gonna have a lot of ups and downs too. Like, you're gonna have a week where you're doing great, you know, you put 40-50 hours in, it's awesome. Then you'll have another week where you'll get like 10 hours of work maybe, and then you'll have like 2 or 3 weeks where you'll just be slammed. Like, you'll just be gobbled up for 12 hours a day, 5 or 6 days a week. And it'll seem awful. Just be prepared for that. Right. I think I would always like try to keep some money in the bank for those low seasons. Cause that's when it gets scary, is whenever it kind of dries up for a month or two, and then all of a sudden it comes rushing back in.
Right. I feel like freelancing, that's another kind of whiplash thing that like you go through, is like, you got to be good at managing your own money when you're a freelance,
because
you're not making consistent money anymore. Yeah. You know, you're not making $1,400 at your like 50 hour job. Like, you're it depends on what you get.
Yeah.
So you got to be more frugal, and you got to, like, you know, you also have to be smart on who you choose to work with, like what you choose to do and stuff like that.
Oh, for sure.
Like, it's just, there's so many factors as a, like, that you have to deal with as a freelancer.
Yeah.
That you just never really occur to you.
Not until you're in the thick of it.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool. I think that's it for this episode. I think, did you get anything out of this as being a new freelancer?
Well, like, I don't know if I got, I think I did. I did. Well, sometimes you got all these thoughts in your head, and then you're like, here's my thing. I feel like there's so little content out there that talks about freelancing. That's honest about freelancing. Yeah. That's honest about freelancing. And I feel like something like where it's just a conversation between me talking about some of the difficulties of it.
Yeah.
I feel like it's very valuable to someone who's just starting it, because, you know, people got to measure the ups and downs.
Well, and you just don't want to be as blindsided as you were, or somebody else was, whenever you realize, oh crap, I only made $1,200 this month. You know what I mean? Yeah. And the month prior you made $5,000 or $6,000, and you were king of the hill, you know? And so, yeah, you just have to be ready.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of relatability and struggle, but I feel like once you, but that also like can inspire you to overcome it, you know, instead of cower from it. So I feel like I got something out of this podcast personally.
Good. And we hope you did too.
Oh yeah.
If you guys did enjoy the podcast, please like and subscribe on YouTube. Leave a comment. If you're on Spotify or iTunes, thank you for listening. If you guys could also subscribe, leave a 5-star review. That would be awesome.
Oh yeah.
We love you guys. See ya.
Bye-bye.